Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 422nd episode of MTG Fast Finance, the podcast that aims to make your profits a total eclipse of the heart. MTG Fast Finance is your weekly podcast covering the world of Magic the Gathering finance, collection management, and speculation. I am your host, James Chilcott, a.k.a. at MTG Critic on Twitter. My co-host is Cliff Daigle, a.k.a. at Word of Commander on Twitter. And we're here to help you folks make and save money playing our favorite game, Magic the Gathering.
Hello, everybody. As always, I'm looking forward to diving into all the developments of the week. But before we do, I want to remind our listeners that this show is produced by MTGPrice.com, the leading MTG finance community. Please sign up today at MTGPrice.com to plan your specs, chat on a great Discord, and read articles by some of the best financial minds in the hobby.
MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff, Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, sealed product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Use the promo code FINANCE5 during checkout at CoolStuffInc.com to save 5% off your order and support this podcast. Cliff, what is on our agenda this week?
Well, we're going to lead off with our metagame week in review. We've got a Modern Challenge and a Pioneer Challenge to talk about. Then we've got our top movers in paper, followed by our top movers online. Our cards to watch are segment 4, and after that we're going to talk about the Secret Lair Equinox drop, which came out today, and by the time this cast comes out, stuff might be sold out, apparently.
We will kick things off here with the Metagame Week in Review. We're going to look at the Modern Challenge from this past Saturday on Magic Online. 112 players, it looks like. This one has Black-Red Scamp coming back to the forefront. We've seen it touching on top eights here and there since the banning of Fury in the format. And we have commented a couple times that it looked like that ban was you know, pretty tactical in the sense that the deck is still viable, but not quite as dominant as it was. And yet here in the latest incarnation of the deck, we have it in first, sixth, and eighth in this particular challenge. Black-Green Yawgmoth has been a persistent presence in the top end of the metagame ever since the printing of relevant cards in Modern Horizons 2. It finished second and third here. Blue-White Control making a kind of rare appearance in fourth place. Four copies of the One Ring, four Solitude, and two Subtlety in that deck. Esper Atraxa, one of the Ascendant decks in the format, in fifth. And then the most interesting build here is the, you know, we've seen a couple of different mono black builds lately that have top aided with Cabal Coffers usually, but this is a completely different animal. This is mono black discard with four Liliana of the Veil and three The Rack, finishing top eight in a Modern Challenge in 2024. Some 30 years after the original release of The Rack.
I mean, it's a great card. It is your end game all in one, and especially with the number of variations you have on the rack. Eight rack is the popular thing to say because there's the enchantment that does basically the same thing. And then there's the Davriel, who can be an extra couple of rack effects if you feel you have the need. But don't forget, Liliana is a game plan all on her own. You just keep on discarding. You just keep on making them sacrifice. It's a real value engine that can be difficult to deal with once you've stripped their hand to nothing.
Does this version have the fifth through eighth copies of the rack, though? Let me just double check that. I have a feeling I did not spot them.
No, I mean, if you're only at three copies of the rack, you're not probably playing the enchantment whose name escapes me. You've got other ways to finish them off, but this is awesome.
They had two Inquisition of Kozilek and four Thoughtseize, a package of cards that was traditionally in Jund and that hasn't been seen all that often, as Jund has been waning. But they do have an Urza's Saga package getting Nihil Spellbomb, Pything Needle, and Shadow Spear.
Oh, that's why they don't need to have more copies of the rack because you've got Saga to go get extra copies of the rack.
That makes sense. And then four Dothi Voidwalker, four Grief, and four Bowmasters with the usual Grief package, Not Dead After All, and Undying Evil to essentially flicker your Grief so that you can really tear their hand apart. Pretty wild that last week we had a Tarmogoyf deck, a couple of Tarmogoyf decks top aiding, and now we've got a Liliana the Veil deck. I mean, these staples are not dead yet. Now, over in the Pioneer Challenge, it was equally interesting. We had Blue-Red in Seoul taking this whole thing down in first place. That must have been a surprise for some people at the top eight table. You got two Cryptic Coat out of MKM, Four Smugglers Copter, not so long ago unbanned for this format. Combat Courier, three copies, two Gleaming Gear Drake, four Inti Seneschal of the Sun, four Spyglass Siren, four Voldaren Epicure, one Case of the Filched Falcon, four Ensoul Artifact, four Shrapnel Blast, two Spell Pierce, and four Torch the Tower alongside 22 lands to take this tournament down.
I mean, you've got all these guys making one drop creatures, making a blood or a map token. You Ensoul it right away. That feels good. I bet it feels pretty good to slap Ensoul Artifact on a Smuggler's Copter so that turn three you're smashing in and looting. That's got to be a real winner too.
It's interesting to me that this is a combat courier and not a Bowmat courier, which would have been my first instinct. But I guess the fact that the combat courier has just a single blue on Earth allows you to potentially bring it back and blast or Ensoul it for the final five.
Yeah, you need the reusability of it.
Very nice. Blue-white control with three copies of five mana Teferi. In second, black-red midrange. In third, with three copies of Liliana the Veil there as well. So Liliana is top-eighting in Standard, Pioneer, and Modern at present. And still relatively cheap, considering it's a mythic that's only had one printing in the last few years. Blue-red Arclight in 4th and 5th, 5-color Bring to Light in 6th and 8th, and Mono Green featuring 4 Tribute to the World Tree and 4 Archdruid's Charm in 7th. So that is 8 triple green spells in a deck that it doesn't seem to care because it's Mono Green.
Real simple to build your mana base at that point.
Yeah. Moving over to the top paper movers, we've got a bunch of stuff related to the hottest commander coming out of the multitude of commanders that are present from the OTGA set that hasn't even released yet. I think pre-release is this Friday. And yet in the past week, the number one commander getting built on EDH Rec is Obeka, Splitter of Seconds. This is a 2/5 Menace Ogre Warlock with one Grixis as its casting cost. Whenever Obeka deals combat damage to a player, you get that many additional upkeep steps after this phase. We played against that this weekend in testing with the Pro Traders, and indeed it did a bunch of pretty silly stuff with several of the cards that you're going to see on this list that are related. One of them was Court of Cunning out of Commander Legends, going 450 to 650 on the back of Obeka. We also have Land Tax Confetti Foils following on with the trend of Confetti Foils from the Wilds of Eldraine bonus sheet being targeted. We've talked about Doubling Season, we've talked about Smothering Tithe, we've talked about Rhystic Study, we've talked about Omniscience, and here we have the Land Tax going 30 to 50 and starting to hollow out. We also got Chivalric Alliance, I believe, out of the Mom Commander cards going $7 to $12. That's going to be black-white tokens builds driving that. Demon of Loathing foils out of Theros Beyond Death going $5 to $10. I think that's Rakdos Sack Tactics in EDH. There's basically no inventory of this left, but the plateau is untested at the new price point, so I would absolutely be a seller of this. And I'm sure if you opened THB CBs, you probably have some of these lying around that you should pull out.
Yeah, Theros Beyond Death. I thought you were thinking of original Theros for a minute there. I was like, wait, there weren't collector boosters then. But yeah, Beyond Death, you're in the clear, and you should definitely be posting these for sale.
You see this card show up in Kali of the Vast, Satoru Umezawa, Rakdos the Showstopper, Rakdos Lord of Riots, and so forth. And then there's Rakdos Patron of Chaos out of MKM, where it has a 65% inclusion rate, but that's only 320 decks registered on EDH Rec, and it's not even in, you know, Rakdos isn't showing up. And if I look at top commanders of the last week, Rakdos nowhere in the top 20.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of inventory.
That one was a little odd to me. We've got Osgiliath, Fallen Capital / Core Haven Surge Foils out of the LTR Plus release. I guess the Surge Foils are from the holiday release, going $5 to $12 on Surge Foil targeting. Couple of additional Obeka cards. You got Court of Embereth and Court of Vantress, extended arts, and their regular copies and their foils were also targeted. Court of Emberith going $3 to $7, 133% gains, and Vantress going $3.5 to $9. Obeka rewards anything that cares about upkeep triggers, and these both provide them. That's kind of what the court cards are all about. So that explains that. We've got Cybermen Squadron Extended Arts out of Doctor Who going 9 to 24. There's a variety of different commanders that can make good use of this, and as a result, pretty much all the versions of this have been on the move. Idol of Oblivion gives you easy access to card draw if you're making tokens, and certainly good in decks like Kambal and several of the other Orzhov commanders that care about getting those tokens into play. You've also got several other commanders that can make good use of it, including things like Voja, who's currently in fourth place that tends to make a lot of tokens, and Caesar, Legion's Emperor, Mr. House, President and CEO. Sauron the Dark Lord makes tokens pretty regularly, and Edgar Markov still in the top 20 as well. I guess this also applies to Wilhelt. I mean, Idol of Oblivion is a colorless 2-mana artifact that can draw cards regularly, so good in all of the above. You've also got Ugin's Nexus as a tricky card you can throw into your Obeka deck. I don't love this one all that much. That much in the deck. I would definitely be selling these into whatever hype Obeka drives. $1.50 to $4 for a bulk mythic. Any copies of this you have sitting around, you're going to want to pull out and put up for sale for sure. Lotho, Corrupt Sheriff, Scroll Foil Edition out of the holiday release. $5 to $15, 200% gains, and really drying up with hardly any inventory left. I called this out for the Foil Extended Art Surge Foils that are also from that release to go $3 to $10 in December. Half of those listings, I think it was 112 listings when we talked about it in early December. Now we're down to 58 listings, so more than half of those are gone. And that version is up to about $5, so I will not be surprised to see it hit target as the even rarer versions, like the Scrolls foils, dry up. I mean, this card is in 57,000 decks already on EDH Rec since its release last summer. That's 12% of all black-white decks. And honestly, having seen it in play many times now and running it in 3 or 4 different Orzhov or Esper builds of my own, it belongs in every single deck that can support it. It just does so much work and has a bunch of synergies with the Tokens Matters commanders in those colors.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong with it, especially you might think that people won't be willing to set it off, but nope, people don't care. And you'll get your good stuff no matter what for a very small investment.
Especially in Esper, you may be starting off with Mystic Remora or Esper Sentinel. You're going to go into this and then either like Protection Ragged or Smothering Tithe or Rhystic Study and Lotho and Kambal. And they can't play around all of it. They've got to play their game. Right. They've got to lean into your action. And the table just can't afford to avoid taxes in the format anymore because there's so many tax cards in these colors. We've also got Bread for the Hunt Surge Foils at a $40k, $1.50 to $5. It's the fanciest version of the card that exists, and we have seen people go after Surge Foils in that position many, many times this year. Inventory's low. It's good in multiple Counters Matters commanders because it rewards hitting with creatures that have counters on them. Hackbal cares about that. Various Atraxa builds care about that. And there are several other commanders that are in similar position. As foretold, confetti foils are worth targeting both because they are solid confetti foils, but also because Obeka really likes this. There was an As Foretold played early in the game where we played against Obeka this weekend, and it got up to 8 counters pretty quickly and just started casting free spells at like obscene levels. And we had to like go out of our way to kill it for fear of it dropping an Omniscience or something onto the board.
That's hilarious.
And then the biggest gainer of the week, by our measure, was Winding Constrictor Surge Foils out of Fallout. The foils were targeted for, the lowest price now is 20. It's a clear buyout. The new plateau hasn't been tested. I wouldn't be surprised to see this land somewhere in the $8 to $12 range as opposed to 20 plus. But of course, Winding Constrictor fits into Atraxa Counters Matters and a bunch of other blue, green, black, and the white, green, black. Yeah, Wise Mothman and any other tricolor decks that tend to care about counters on creatures.
Yep, pretty clear bio. There's 2 copies left on TCG Player right now.
Over on Magic Online, most of the hottest action was Legacy related. Carpet of Flowers at Urza Saga going 4.05 ticks to 6.28. on a broad usage in Legacy. Ratchet Field Medic took off, went 12.21 ticks to 19.14. It showed up in a Painter's Servant Legacy deck or something. This is a card I run in Joda Transformers, but I've almost cut multiple times because there's other cards that do the same kind of job a little better. We also had Toxicroak out of 40k going 2.17 to 3.71, 70% gains. But it's really emblematic of most of the 40k cards because these decks were added to Magic Online as part of their licensing agreement, but they went off sale this weekend. So there was a play to be made both on the decks, and especially the one that had the St. Catherine card that's good in Legacy. But the decks are just off sale forever now, as far as we know. So you would imagine there will be price gains across the board. And we flagged that in the Discord. And I think the action on just the 40K decks probably could have justified your Pro Trader fees for the year.
Oh, absolutely. When stuff like that's happening on Magic Online, you got to be ready right away. And luckily, our Discord members are on top of things.
Moving on over to cards to watch, it's low-hanging fruit, but it's still the right choice for today. Some of you are going to hear this too late to take advantage, I have a suspicion, but it's got to be said. The best stuff to go after right today, is probably the Fallout Foil Bundle Secret Lair that's available on the Secret Lair site. Currently available for $99.99. I would imagine that this is going to do pretty well. There's a couple of reasons for that. The Fallout release was short printed, and a lot of the cards are pricey as a result. The Pip-Boy art seems to have been well received by the community. Seems like there's a solid, you know, Venn diagram of Magic players who care about Fallout, just like Cliff. And there's a big Fallout TV show coming out on Amazon April 11th, which is 3 days from now, which is why Wizards, you know, released these Secret Lair drops not when they released the main product line, but a month later. And I would imagine that show is going to wake a few people up that are, you know, in the middle of that Venn diagram and get them chasing some more cards that they can match up in their decks and collections. It's nice that there are already Fallout cards out there that have matching art that you might want to pair with these Secret Lair drops. It's also pretty solid what they are offering in these particular drops, right? Like these aren't amazing card lists for any of the Fallout drops, but they're all solid. So the three of them included are the Vault Boy Foil Edition, which includes Winter Orb, Trinisphere, Sphere of Resistance, and Grand Arbiter Augustine IV. I think that's probably the weakest in terms of profile. Those cards have relatively high price points, but a lot of that is due to overall availability, so you would expect it to come down with a release like this. There's also the Points of Interest, which is lands. This one is Bajuka Bog, Command Beacon, Fabled Passage, Reflecting Pool, and Reliquary Tower. This one is probably the best of the three, I would imagine, in terms of there being solid demand for fancy versions of the cards in question, and a demonstrated pattern of previous Secret Lairs having much higher price points on fancy versions of the cards versus the base version of what those cards are, since you know things like Command Beacon and like Bajuka Bog have been printed umpteen number of times, but when you get a fancy Bajuka Bog, that's a different animal. There's also the special foil and non-foil edition of the Secret Lair from the Fallout series of three, and this one has additional cards. It's got Steel Shaper's Gift, it's got Propaganda, it's got Elixir of Immortality, it's got Council's Judgment, Idyllic Tutor, Anger, and Lightning Bolt. I'm not entirely sure why one of them has four and one of them has seven, where they could have done, you know, six and five or something, but...
James, come on. It's because Special has seven letters, and each one of these matches up to a letter in Special.
Gotcha. Still, I mean, overall, you're getting... None of the cards I just listed are especially expensive right now, but these are likely to be the fanciest versions thereof. I could easily see the Propaganda and the Lightning Bolt being worth money, and then the rest of these being, you know, somewhere between $5 and $10. And the reason I'm flagging this bundle is because it has good dynamics between the TV show and the popularity of the Fallout release. But they also sent out a warning via email blast a couple hours ago that said that the Points of Interest and Special bundles alongside the Rovina Kai bundle, release, were in low supply. And the last time they did an inventory warning on Secret Layers, they sold out within 24 hours. So I had not purchased the Ravina Kai. The only other one I purchased this afternoon was Diabolical Dioramas, which was the Laura Plankser release. It's got Gravebreaker Lamia, Aura Shards, Fiend Artisan, and Caridor Ghost Chieftain. I thought that art was too good to pass up on. But the Ravina Kai is also quite lovely, and it has a Nala Archmage Ritualist, Aether Vial, Arcane Signet, and Sword of the Animist. I would imagine that most of the weight there is going to get carried by the Arcane Signet and the Sword of the Animist. But there isn't a particularly amazing Aether Vial art that anybody's like super enamored with. So this may just end up being the default best version thereof. And I'm curious to see which of these, the four cards in this drop, end up the most expensive. I would guess it's probably Arcane Signet, then Aether Vial, then Sword of the Animist, then Anala. And if you get the Fallout bundle drop, you're basically getting the three foil drops at $33 instead of $40. And I think that you can get, as a result, from something like $33 a drop to something like $50 to $60 a drop. So I'm going to call it to go $100 to $160. And the nice thing about this bundle is they're all Fallout related, so you can sell them as a bundle on something like eBay and probably get in and out clean, only shipping them once.
That makes a lot of sense. I went in for three of the everything foil bundles and then four extra of the Ravina Kai foils because I think those are gorgeous and I basically wanted them for myself. So I can see where you're coming from on just the Fallout ones being worth it. And I think this is a solid pick, especially in with bundle pricing. We've got notice that it might sell out soon. And if it sells out quick, we know from experience that if you are one of the first people to have these in hand, if you get your orders in this first day, like you and I have managed to do. I didn't wait to get home to order mine. That's a mistake I made last time. Then you can be one of the first ones to sell it at a lovely premium.
Sometimes true.
We'll see how it goes. Like, but if it sells out quick, the FOMO can be very, very strong in the Magic community. So I think this is solid. We will probably tell people to pick this up in a moment anyway.
A couple of things worth flagging here. When they make a notice like that that says they're on low supply, that can mean that there's overwhelming demand. Or, given that all three of the ones they flagged were foil versions, not non-foil versions, it could mean that foils generally undersell non-foils and that they have an easier time selling out. Like, they could have sold triple the non-foils as they have the foils, but because they printed so much more of the non-foils, the foils are near their limit, but the non-foils are not. So it doesn't automatically say that foils are more popular than non-foils. That's worth flagging. Right. It can also be that, you know, we saw with the Phyrexian Praetor drop a ways back where there was data floating around that they had sold like pushing 100,000 units of that drop. They stayed cheap for a very long time. They did have a peak at one point, but then they fell off and stayed cheap forever because, yeah, it sold very, very well. But that meant there was tons of inventory in the market. So you, without knowing, you know, what the print runs are of the various drops, selling out does not necessarily mean it's going to go up. But certainly you have a greater chance of profit on something that has sold out versus something that has not. So that's all information worth parsing and including in your decision making here. The other thing is they're always messing with the pricing on bundles and trying to incentivize us in different ways to see what works and what doesn't. Ultimately, with the end goal of them giving us the least to get the most profit out of a drop, right. and to make sure that they don't have too much inventory sitting around that they might have to destroy. So in the case of the Equinox Super Drop, they had a all the foils super bundle, which was all six drops in foil, and they had a non-version of that, and they had a Fallout bundle, foil bundle, and a foil and non-foil bundle for the other three. But the only ones that allowed you to get the Ignoble Hierarch included with the bundles were the super bundles. But the thing about that is, if you look at the math, they're not giving you the Ignoble Hierarch for free. They're charging you $10 for it.
Right.
So, I think that those Ignoble Hierarchs may well be worth targeting as they start popping up in the market. I'm curious to see whether they will be priced at more than $10. I didn't want to have the three non-Fallout bundles in inventory at the same level as I wanted the other stuff. So I opted out of getting the Mega Bundle and opted for the Fallout, all foil bundles. So three of the Fallouts, I think at either 6 or 8 units each. But had they given away the Ignoble Hierarch for free on the Mega Bundle, I probably would have gone for that because it would have pushed me over the edge.
I don't think there's a wrong play here necessarily. I like the dioramas. I think that the Phoebe Wall cards are neat, and the discount on them really made it worthwhile. I wasn't worried about having all of them. I think there's enough value in all of these that it'll be fine long term, and I'm hoping to get some of these in for a quick turnover, especially if it turns out some of them sell out. So we'll.
I suspect the Phoebe Wall is going to be the lowest sales here, and that can lead to some steep prices on the units that make it to market and or on the singles that are included. If I had to pick one thing to look at as singles start to appear, it would be the Swords to Plowshares. Because that's a very nice looking Swords to Plowshares. It's going to be unique, and I think it's going to undersell when it's, one of the top removal spells in EDH and still gets played in Legacy.
I think there's not any other special Door of Destinies, right?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, there's just the Morning Tide, and this was back when the pre-release promo was a different art with the insignia on there. So it's going to be a popular card in that sense, but not everybody wants literally a fairy ring of fairies in a mushroom ring and that coming out of the cave and everything. But, it's special and unique, and that's what the secret lair is. Can I say, thank God this drop does not have a land bundle, and this drop has nothing in a regular frame. Amen and hallelujah.
That seems to suggest that they are learning their lessons as they go, because regular land bundles have sometimes made money because they. Right. But I suspect that's because they undersold, and then trailing demand caught up to them. Door of Destinies in 67,000 EDH rec decks, but that's less than 2% of the decks that could play it. So it's the fanciest version of the card, probably the second most expensive here after the swords. Yeah. How about your selections this week?
I picked regular cards this week, but one of them we've kind of already talked about, Idol of Oblivion. It's a card that we could have got in etched foil at the beginning of the year for a much cheaper price. And honestly, if we gotten in it November, we could have gotten it for like $5. But right now, the etched foils are available for near to $10. There's only 23 vendors who have a near mint etched foil available. There's only a couple more in the lightly played range. It ramps real quickly up into the $15 range. And since this is, something from Commander Masters, this is from, a while ago, we're not going to get any more of these until they get around to giving us some premium version in a secret lair. Entirely possible that we do that. But until we get those, I think that sometime in the next 6 to 12 months, the $10 etched foils are going to turn into $20 etched foils, considering that this is, we've seen that etched foil is worth a definite premium over the regular foil versions. And there is a, you can get a regular, a pack foil for a couple of bucks, but this one just looks better and it should do well.
Yeah, Idol of Oblivion is great in pretty much any tokens deck, right? It's 2 for an artifact that says tap, draw a card, but you can only do that if you created a token this turn. This is getting easier and easier when you have cards like Lotho or Cambal or Taysa or whatever that are making clues or treasures or whatever else. I mean, there's just Wizards has leaned so hard into the artifact tokens matter theme as a way of keeping, design space churning into new directions, that, you know, they continue to give us new token types, and Idle doesn't care which of them is coming into play. It's not looking at just creature tokens, it's any token. And then sometimes you get to pay 8 and turn the thing into a 10/10 Eldrazi token,
which is especially awesome with the new Gered that's coming out, that basically says tap populate.
Sure.
And you get there might be a happy little bump coming for that. I think that's going to be a popular deck once people get their hands on it.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows up in so many different decks because there's so many tokens, matters, commanders. You have Nayali, you have Mishra, Othari, Gered, Kit, Kanto, Amara, Benny Brax, Brutaclad, Odur Tak, Adrix and Nev, Generous Ferric Rockrick, Samwise Gamgee, Sam and Frodo, Adeline. Like, it just goes on and on and on. There's Ginny Fae. I run it. I have it in Kambal. It's very cheap card draw. So, Foil Etched doesn't have a super high print run in Commander Masters. We've seen other Foil Etched cards get targeted. This seems pretty reasonable to me. The, you know, obviously the best entry point was back at the end of last year, early this year, where you could get them at $5. They're a few dollars ahead of that now, but they're also draining out, selling pretty steadily, you know, onesie, twosie per day. So unless they pop up in a secret layer or a subset sometime soon, which seems unlikely, you know, it is what it is. I could see it having some association with Modern Horizons 3, given that there's an Eldrazi theme there. There might be, sure, a related secret layer drop where it could show up. If it dodges that, then, you know, I think these etches are well positioned to gain.
Cool. My other pick this week is probably the best at committing crimes at a commander table. And this one's more of a brick play. I'm really not sure if this is going to get there, given the number of copies out there. But you can get the launch party version of Endbringer, the Oath of the Gatewatch rare that says tap, deal a damage, or colorless tap, target creature can't attack or block, or double colorless tap, draw a card, but it untaps during each other player's untap step. It is a crime spree all on its own, as long as you can get 5 and a colorless. And the colorless is tricky. But anything that says, whenever you commit a crime, do this awesome thing, Endbringer is going to be in those strategies, is my guess. You have a lot of ways to make colorless mana, especially with your mana rocks. So I think that people will be playing a lot of this, and you can get the launch party promo at a pretty reasonable price. You can get it for around $2, maybe a little bit less. There's a lot of lightly played copies out there. There's 66 vendors with near mint, and some of them have significant walls. So there's a lot out there. But if we get into a lot of committing crimes, Endbringer is where it's going to be. It's got different art, but the same frame. And if you look at Endbringer original pack foils, they're already starting out a couple bucks more expensive. So I'm looking at the launch party versions as more of a brick play, hopefully, for the future.
I don't see a crimes commander showing up in our top 20 yet on EDH Rec, so I'm dubious. Obeka, okay, seems to be the only OTJ that has taken off so far. I thought for sure Campbell would be top 3, top 5, but way down the list so far. People are definitely underestimating that card, and there's at least 4 or 5 other commanders that are equally viable. But Obeka seems to be the one that people have gravitated towards, or at least that set people off on speculation activity so far. If Obeka holds that and nothing else from OTJ breaks through into the top 20, then I don't think crimes are going to matter. The other thing is that Endbringer is good in the sense that it can crime on each turn, but there's other cards in that deck that can just do it infinitely. And those are the ones that are going to get most of the focus. There's also, I'm pretty sure I have a brick of these because like a 7-year-old brick or something that, mm-hmm, I'm not even going to pull them out yet, because I think there's just too many of these sitting around that it's going to be really hard for them to gain in a way that you can actually cash out on. If something goes $2 to $5, unless your in was 50 cents or something and the buy list gets up to $2, you don't really have an out. I will say that it looks like I should have this in my Gearson deck. Like, I've definitely overlooked that option. Because in Gearson, this is like lightning bolt per turn.
Right.
That's pretty cool. But yeah, I think it's great in crime decks. I just don't think this is going to get there.
I am equally concerned about the commanders who don't jump out at me for committing a crime. Like Geese of the Hellraiser, whenever you commit a crime, make two zombie tokens that end up being 3/3 menace, and that only triggers once a turn. So anything that says commit a crime, if it gets popular, Endbringer will probably have its day in the sun. But yes, I agree, and I want everybody to be clear that this is one of my more questionable picks, but when I was looking through the databases for the best crime enablers, there's nothing better than Endbringer out there.
Well, I mean, there's things like Ear of Days that can do it infinitely, and there's multiple of those cards that have been brought up by the pro traders in the Discord. It's the stuff that has zero activation cost.
Eater of Days has been eroded. It has to be tapped.
Yeah, but you just take. Yeah, but that's easy to do. You just get it. You attack with it and then do the targeting.
Right. So okay, but I see what you're saying. Yes, that is true. But it's not like commit a crime, deal one damage, has been a thing. I'm just saying that like as people want to commit crimes, this could be popular. I see where you're coming from, though.
I agree. Like, I don't think it's the top 5 crime cards, but I do think it's top 10 or 15, assuming you've got the colorless mana support for it. We just don't have a crimes commander that has made its way into the top 5, top 10, so it just doesn't look like that support's going to be there. If that changes, then, you know, this is, you know, worth a look, but I would not go out on a limb and buy 50 copies of this. Because I'm stuck holding 50 from the last time there was a reason to buy Endbringer, and that was many years ago. So far, it's still in the bad specs box, and I doubt it's going to get out here. We can double back on the secret layer, see if there's anything else we haven't covered yet, despite talking about it in Cards to Watch. So secret layer, Equinox, the, you know, 3 Fallout, 3 non-Fallout. I think we've covered most of what's necessary there, so I guess we can move on. I guess we didn't say all the cards in Phoebe Wall. That was Swords of Plowshares, Fairy Artisans, Dockside Chef, Alella, Artful Provocateur, and Door of Destinies. We did flag that Swords and Door are probably the 2 cards to watch there. This is a smaller secret layer than we've seen in the past. We've had up to 9 drops per layer, super drop, and this time we only got 6. So fairly focused. Seems to make sense. Fantastic art across the board. I don't think you can go wrong with any of these for personal use if there's cards that you know your decks will need, because it's all good. I mean, the art direction on Secret Lair has been absolutely excellent. One of the high points of the last couple of years has been the continued progression towards working with more and more interesting artists that provide true collectibles. And that's definitely worth flagging. I know one thing I missed in my reasons to go after the Fallout drop. Some small percentage of the Fallout have access to the Mana Vault. And I'm willing to bet you that limited release Mana Vault is going to be worth a lot of money. If that is at a similar drop rate to the Persistent Petitioners and Shadowborn Apostles that occasionally occurred in drops over the last couple of years, if it's that rare, that is going to be very expensive as an extremely rare version of Mana Vault, maybe the rarest since beta. And if it's at even if it's at like a 1 in 10 inclusion rate, it's probably still going to be pretty pricey.
I don't think it'll be even as frequent as 1 in 10.
I mean, they didn't tell us. They just told us, like, it was a small number. In the Discord, one of the pro traders was asking, like, is this going to be if you get the Fallout bundle, 3 of each, are you likely to get one? I said, no, probably not. My guess is that the drop rate is lower than, you know, getting one of each bundle would get you one.
Go ahead.
Because I think it's in place of a bonus card. There's 2 possible bonus cards, I believe, for the... I can't remember if it was Vault Boy in Points of Interest or Special in Points of Interest that it was associated with. But, yeah, I think the drop rate's going to be low. Somebody's going to open 30 or 40 of them and give us a pretty decent idea of how frequent they are. and we will report on that back on that later. I guess the other thing we can do is take a look at, you know, the top 10 commanders of the week. We do have Obeka sitting at number one as the leading OTJ commander. We have the Wise Mothman from the Fallout release sitting in number two. We have Pant Laza from LCI last fall in number three. We have Voja, Jaws of the Conclave, and has fallen to fourth from MKM. Your Ur-Dragon is still in fifth, followed by Maya Traxa in sixth. Caesar, Legion's Emperor, and Mr. House, President and CEO, are both Mardu tokens decks. So that is certainly worth keeping in mind, and ranked in seventh and eighth and getting built at about the same pace. So the two of those combined are as much Mardu tokens demand as everything but Obeka. Obeka being at 1,200 decks on the week. Caesar and Mr. House add up to about just over 1,000. So that's 200 more than the Wise Mothman. And so I would argue that Mardu, you know, tokens matter specs are probably at least as interesting as anything Wise Mothman related. Yuriko the Tiger Shadow in 9th and Sauron the Dark Lord in 10th.
Speaking of Mardu, though, Ishin is right there at number 11. And so three Mardu commanders who really want to do their thing all to bunch together is always worth paying attention to. Caesar and Ishin work together so nicely, too. Those two are peanut butter and jelly. They may not want to say it, but if you have Caesar in the Ishin deck or Ishin in the Caesar deck, either one feels real darn good. One of the things I didn't know you could do is there is a reusable treasure, the Glittering Stash. I don't remember what set that's from. But because it's a treasure and you can just tap it for mana instead of having to sack it. So you can always get some extra Mr. House triggers going on that way, too.
Edgar Markov's also in the top 15 and Mardu and cares about vampire tokens specifically. So there's actually quite a lot of pressure on Mardu tokens related cards, which is probably part of what's going on with Lotho.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Soon we'll see if Teza Karlov pops off, because she gives all your creature tokens Vigilance and Lifelink, which is a wonderful thing to have with your army of 3/3 robots.
All right, well, I guess that's all we got to cover this week. Where can folks find you online, my friend?
You can find me online at Twitter at Word of Commander, or my articles every Friday on mtgprice.com.
And you can find me on Twitter at MGGCritic, as well as via my occasional articles on MGGPrice.com and my constant haunting of the ProTrader Discord. I'd also like to remind our listeners to check out the MGGPrice.com ProTrader service. For just $9.99 a month or $109.99 per year, you can get early access to this podcast, fantastic articles by the best MTG finance minds in the business, low-cost group buys, and a super active Discord forum that will drive better returns and save you money playing Magic the Gathering.
Once again, MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff, Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, seal product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Please use the promo code FINANCE5, that's finance with the number 5, during checkout at CoolStuffInc.com to save 5% off your order and support this podcast. Ooh, that's it for this week, James, but there's always more coming.
All taken care of. Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, listeners. Hope you guys all had a good eclipse day out there, getting some cool pictures. We'll see all of you next week on another episode of MTG Fast Finance.